to another episode of the Daggers and Lids podcast. I'm pleased to say it is December. We are now in December, so that means we can officially play Christmas songs. I certainly did that at the weekend, which was good. But we've got a lot to chat about, Daggers, as ever. What we're going to do today is we're going to start big. We're going to start international cricket.
There's only one way to start.
The world.
We
exactly.
can only start big. Mean
we have to
as
start
as you
big.
Mean to go on. That's
absolutely.
Why. Go so big or go home.
Absolutely. So that's what we're going to do today. And then we're going to zoom in a bit towards the end and chat about domestic cricket. But we've also been able to have a chat with Charlie Dean as well. So that was really good to get her thoughts. We'll speak about that a little bit later and hear what she has to say. But in the meantime, Daggers, how have you been? How's
yes.
Blue behaving himself?
Yes, Blue the dog is he's getting bigger. We're talking for his jams the other day. He now weighs 7.5 kilos. So since we've had him, he's put on 2.5 kilos, but he is not fat. Oh, no, he is a fit boy. He's just growing. And we're now able to take him for a walk. So I say we, it's been me. And you may notice my horrific hair at this moment in time. That's because I've had the woolly hat on. I've got a pair of wellies now, dog walking shoes.
Are they hunters' wellies? That would really be country life.
They weren't. I wanted to get hunters. I did. And play the role fully. But I got mud dog wellies. Very comfortable. And not as expensive. So call me cheap, you may. But they do the job. He's a little bit sceptical on going for walks. So we have sort of like moments where we just sat down on a pavement and I have to lure him with a treat to get any more walking out of him. But no, he's on good form, getting bigger and stronger. Otherwise, I actually have no news apart from the fact that I'm power washing practically the entire house. I might have even been power washing in the last episode of the podcast. I've not finished yet, but it looks impressive and I feel manly. You know, I feel with my big water gun. So everything is now clean. I'm a bit OCD when it comes to cleanliness. Now I've taken on a job which I think is a little bit too big for me, but I will not quit. No one likes a quitter. I will not quit.
Well, the bigger the better. I have to admit, I did see your social media posts on the jet wash thing, and it looks so satisfying when you get it, you get it done.
Actually, when it's really clean. And it also shows that I'm very dull. That's the only thing interesting I've got to post on my social media is the fact that I'm cleaning stuff with high pressure water. So anyway, how about you? What's new in your world?
Yeah, I'm good. Similar, just pretty quiet at the moment. Had a really nice weekend, actually, in the village where we live up in Leicestershire, which you know well. We had our Christmas food and drink trail. So all around the village, there were stalls of just amazing food, all different cuisines. There was mulled wine, mulled salt, cider. The shops are open, so it felt very Christmassy, I have to admit. Enjoyed it.
I should be wearing my Christmas jumper, really. Maybe next episode I shall wear that and a Santa hat to cover my horrific hair. I'm starting to get in the mood. I want to get the lights out. I need to get the lights out.
Yes, and the tree.
Because we've got to keep up with the Joneses, don't we?
Well, absolutely.
There's a couple of Christmas lights on our road as well. So let's see what I've got in the garage.
Yeah, dig it out. Right, let's talk some cricket. So we said we'd start international cricket.
Yes.
So I thought we would start with a topic that would actually affect everyone in the international women's game. And that is the appointment of Jace Shah, who is he started his appointment as ICC chair yesterday, which was Sunday the 1st of December. He has replaced Greg Barclay, who did his stint. People will know that Jace Shah was the former BCCI chair. Before that, he was at Gujarat Cricket Association.
Yeah.
He oversaw the development of that massive stadium in Ahmedabad. I think it's the largest cricket stadium in the world. But the thing that I wanted to talk about, Daggers, was what he's highlighted as his priorities in his time in this role. So the first one was making sure that they leverage cricket through the 2028 Olympic Games in LA, which I think makes sense. But specifically to the women's game, he's spoken about accelerating the growth of the women's game. But the one thing that he hasn't mentioned yet or touched on was the situation in Afghanistan. Now, I know that's something that we're going to speak about in more detail later, but I suppose one thing for us to discuss is, what do you think that acceleration of the growth of the women's game is going to look like? Because it's an easy thing to say, isn't it? Is it more teams in tournaments, those types of things?
Look, Jay Shah, obviously, he is one of those figures within the game of cricket. And you cannot rely what he has done for the BCCI and for Indian cricket. I mean, for many people, he might be it might be a figure that causes a bit of angst, given, you know, things like revenue shares and the fact that he's... But he did what he had to do for Indian cricket. Now, he's also been the one who was in charge whilst the formation of the WPL happened. Now, for the women's game, that has been just such a huge aspect for the exposure of the game within India, but also globally. And when they do it, they have done it properly. And they have sort of, no stone has been left unturned. They have got all of the bells and whistles that the men's... What was my worry when the WPL started was that it would be a poor relation to the IPL, and it has been anything but. What they did get and what he got was branding. He got the idea of making that sort of the state of the two competitions very equal, not financially, granted, that is yet to come. And that's an aspect he's also talked about, pay equality, that he wants to sort of focus on that, which again is a good thing for the women's game. So he says it's a critical juncture in the women's game. And I'm just reading what his quote was.
We
stand at a critical juncture in terms of coexistence of multiple formats and accelerating the growth of the women's game. Now, I think that pretty much sort of maintains the same line of the women's game by with T20 and One Day International Cricket, probably T20 more so. How he's going to do that, what that actually means, I don't know. I'll be also intrigued to see, and we talked about Test cricket last year, about where Greg Barclay sort of kind of turned around and went, well, no, I'm not that interested in Test cricket. I'll be intrigued to see what Jay Shah says about it, because Test cricket has now, you know, come back to India, if you like, and they've been pretty good at it. And there's, I think, a couple of tests a year that's going to be happening. So will he be a little bit more amenable to Test cricket? Or maybe that means more multi-format series around the world. I don't know.
Yeah.
As you say, when you first start a job, there's language that you use, what that actually means in practice, how much time he will dedicate to that, given the wide-reaching nature of the job, I don't know. He's saying all the right things. Let's see how it actually exists in practice.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the fact that he's gone out of his way to mention the women's game, we know sometimes people in those big positions don't often even reference it. So, hopefully that's positive signs for the growth of the women's game. Right, we move on now to the series in Bangladesh, where Ireland are currently out. I'll just give you an update of what happened out there. So they've completed their three-match ODI series, which Bangladesh won 3-0, all pretty comfortably. Their last ODI was today. Bangladesh chased down 185 inside the 38th over. I think it's fair to say Ireland struggled with the bat throughout all of those ODIs. You'd imagine the conditions probably played a part in that. They wouldn't be overly accustomed to playing out in the subcontinent. The T20s start on Thursday, the 5th of December. But one thing for us to maybe touch on, and this is good old Hypercourse, who we both follow on the socials. Hypercourse said on the social media that Bangladesh now have 19 points in the Women's ICC Championship, which is obviously the qualifying process for the next World Cup, which is in India in 2025. They've got three more games to play, and that will be against the West Indies. If they win one of those three ODIs against the West Indies and Australia whitewash New Zealand, then Bangladesh will end up qualifying over New Zealand, which when I saw that, I thought, wow, that is a tough position for New Zealand to be in, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think, I think given the state of you know, we've got one day international series coming up. Australia are playing India. We'll talk about that in a moment. But yeah, obviously then that Australia-New Zealand series in New Zealand. And there are wide-reaching ramifications. And you know what? Bangladesh off the back, I think it's been a great series for Bangladesh. Obviously home conditions. I actually think Ireland will have gained a lot, actually.
Yes.
And I'm quite fancy them nicking one of the T20 internationals against Bangladesh. Yeah. I quite fancy that, because obviously when the game is shortened, the sides come a little bit closer together. I've always said that. And they've got difference makers within that Ireland side now. You only have to look at Gavin Lewis or La Prendergast, Delaney as well, who's a quality player. So I think this has been actually, even though it's a 3-0 whitewash for Ireland, I think this is good for them. More of it that happens, the better. The more conditions they're exposed to, the more broad their cricketing knowledge and experience will be. But I didn't know about that situation. Thank God for Ireland. My God. Thank God for him. Because I had no clue. And this is why he's well worth a follow. If you follow anything to do with women's cricket, please do follow Hypercourse, because he's tweeted that. I went, holy moly. This could genuinely happen. And as I say, that Bangladesh West Indies series, where is that, by the way? Is that in the Caribbean or is that in Bangladesh?
Oh, it's a good question, actually. I haven't seen.
Be that as it may, there's going to be quite a little bit riding on that as well. And you wouldn't put it past Australia to beat New Zealand 3-0 either.
Yeah.
So there's still lots to get sorted within that championship. And I'll be keeping a close eye on it.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Dad, because I know that scoreline of 3-0 to Bangladesh will be not nice reading for Irish fans, but actually the fact that they're touring and they're travelling the world and playing in different conditions, they've got a young squad as well. Mm. I remember some of the players that they've got are from the Under-19 World Cup, which we covered a couple of years ago, and those players are now coming through. So, yeah, as you say, hopefully a lot of learning for Ireland. So you've already mentioned the India-Australia series.
Yeah.
That will be an exciting one. That all kicks off on the 5th of December. And it's worth noting, it is just the 3-match ODI series. And that's because I feel we've got to the point now of the ICC Women's Championship where everyone is just trying to get those fixtures done and completed, because New Zealand had to go straight
off.
It's
almost like they're on the phone. It's almost like they're on the phone. Can you do the 15th? Can you do now? The 16th? Because maybe it's got lunch on. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's play in between the 5th and the 11th, and we can. Brilliant. No, I totally agree with you. And it's a kind of meaningless one in a sense.
Yeah.
India are hosting, so they've already qualified. Australia have already qualified. But I think when two sides like, what do you think? When two sides. Yeah. Of that nature go up against each other in a 50-over competition, I think it's going to be well worth keeping an eye on.
Yeah, I think that they get a good amount of support as well. I think the first match starts up in Brisbane, obviously, I'm assuming. Actually, I don't know which ground that is at.
AB
but
Field.
Brisbane.
It's at AB Field. Alan Border Field. Yeah.
So
the first two.
It's nice wicket there.
Yeah, first two, it sounds like you said it's a nice wicket there, like you've got runs on it before. Have you?
Well,
I think you did, didn't you?
It was where, this is going back to when I made my debut, we had a warm-up game there for the test match, and the warm-up game was at the AB Oval. And yeah, it was a really nice wicket.
What did you get?
I can't remember. I think I might have got maybe 70 odd.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm not sure. But anyway, I didn't say it for
just,
that reason.
Just before Lydia turns into Jeffrey Boycott and remembers every ground that she scores on. Oh yeah, nice wicket there. Please ask me about how I did. The two ODIs. We're all guilty of it. We really are. The two ODIs, 5th and the 7th, that's at Alan Border Field in Brisbane. Then they go to the WACA on the 11th for the final one day international. But there's some interesting team news that I've been reading about coming out of this. Shefali Verma dropped from the side. She's not had a great run of it in 50 over cricket recently, 108 runs in her last six games. There's no Pooja Vastrakar. There's no Asha Sharma. Yeah. There's no Hemalatha. There's no Shreyanka Patil. I'm not sure if Shreyanka's an injury or illness. I'm not quite sure. And Asha Sharma was out against New Zealand because of illness, I think.
Right.
So none of those. But coming back is Rishi Ghosh. She missed the New Zealand one-day internationals because she had board exams. Priya Punia has come back in, 28-year-old batter. Harleen Diol, Minu Mani, she of the Junction, and Tita Sadhu, which I'm really pleased that fast bowler. Yastika also, latest news, Yastika Bhatia is not going to be playing because of a wrist injury that she sustained in the WBBL. She had a pretty decent one, actually.
Yeah, she did.
So Uma Chetri has been called up. But again, there's... I wonder about India is that they're looking for things that aren't necessarily there. They're looking for answers that I think are more settled side. And look, I understand if you want to drop Shefali, much like we talked about, say, Alice Capsey.
Just
needs a bit of a reset or something like that. But I don't know. I think the core of that side, you know, eight or nine of them, I think we could pretty much pencil in. I'm surprised about Vastrakar. I'm not quite sure if that's injury related.
I don't know either. I did see she was rested. The term they use was rested for the New Zealand series.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a long rest if she's going to miss this series as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
So whether there's something else in between the lines, we don't know. But yeah, I agree with what you say about Shefali Verma. I actually thought of Alice Capsey straight away.
Yeah.
And I thought, actually, this isn't going to be a bad thing for you. I think she has had such a sharp trajectory into international cricket. She's had a lot of success and she is sort of tapered off. So I think this is a good time for her to reflect. They've just done it the other way. They've dropped her for the ODI stuff. Whereas obviously Alice Capsey was dropped for the T20s. But a lot of changes. And I think from a captaincy and coach point of view, when you've got so many changes, it's hard to be clear in the way that you want to play as a collective 11, because you're actually, that's not your priority. When you've got so many changes, your priority is, well, who's going to fill what role? And until you know that, you can't solidify that brand and style of cricket. So it'd be interesting to see how it pans out. But Australia have had to make a few changes as well to their squad. So Alyssa Healy, who she picked up a knee injury during the WBBL for Sydney Sixers, which ruled her out. So she's going to be out for this series. Tali McGrath is going to come in and captain. Nice for Australia. They've got so many options for captains. But what that does do is it might open up an opportunity for Georgia Vole, who's been called up to the squad. And there's been talk that she might open the batting with Phoebe Litchfield. A bit on Georgia Vole. She plays her cricket up in Queensland in the WNCL. But she moved from Brisbane Heat to Sydney Thunder this season and she did really well. I watched a few of the games that she played and she was very, very strong. There's also still no Taylor Vlemmick because she's just had surgery on her shoulder, which she injured during the T20 World Cup. I don't know about you, Daggers, but she must be one of the most unluckiest. Right. I reckon she's on par with someone like Rhys Topley when it comes to injuries.
I totally agree. and it's so disappointing. The most, obviously, for the player, for Taylor Vlemmick. And we don't get to watch a bowl. And we don't get to see her part of that Australian attack. And I do hope that I think it was sort of going to the men's game a little bit, but Pat Cummins, when he was introduced into the Australian side, he burst onto the scene and then had a real sort of run of bad injuries and then sort of got himself sorted out and has been ever present since. And I'm hoping it's a similar sort of thing with Taylor Vlemmick, where she's had this one injury and then another one and then, you know, a little bit of a burst here and a burst there. And I hope there is a period of time where she gets 2 or 3 years. You know, fast bowling is you're always going to get injured. And that's always going to be round the corner, and it's hard work on the body. But I do dearly hope that we get to see the best of her over the next couple of years or so. She can overcome it, recover from surgery, let the body recover, and then we get to see her again. So, yeah, I agree with you. Like Rhys Topley, it's frustrating for everybody because we want to watch her play because we're selfish, but for the player, more over than anything. And I just hope she keeps the mind right, because it can wear on you when you get injuries after injuries. And it can, you know, you sort of get into a state of, oh, crikey, when am I going to play next again? You know, that's all you want to do. But stay positive, Taylor. We want to see you back playing as soon as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, as I say, that series all kicks off on the 5th of December. So it should be a really good series. So we'll be following that one.
Yes, we will.
Right, we move a little bit closer to home now. England, as many people know, are out in South Africa. They've just completed the T20 series, which England won 3-0. They've just landed in Kimberley, where we've been, Daggers. We've got interesting memories of Kimberley, to say the least.
Well, Kimberley, which has our hotel and the ground, and we saw nothing else because we were told we weren't supposed to go out. Oh, we went. Well, no, we did. We went to the big hole, didn't we?
That's what I was alluding to. But I don't think we can talk about what happened on the podcast.
Oh, my God. Yes. You just reminded me. Dear listener and viewer, very, very quickly. Did we mention this on the podcast before?
I don't know.
I don't think we did.
I can't remember.
But basically, we went to the big hole, which is the big mining sort of historical, great museum, actually. Really, really, really.
Not to be confused with the Black Hole.
Not to be confused with the Black Hole, because those people who went to see that still waiting to hear back from them. So we went to the Big Hole, which is this big mining, and it tells you all about the mining for diamonds and all precious metals and that sort of stuff. And it was fascinating. Apart from on our trip, it was a guided tour. There was me, you, and Mel Farrell and some of the commentary team. Randomly, one of the umpires came along as well from the ICC. Nice to see him. And then three other people who were possibly the most inappropriately behaved people. There was two girls. There was two girls and one boy. And the boy was a little bit older than the girls. The girls were sort of, you know, younger. He was older. And there was some definite questionable behavioural patterns between the three of them, if you can read between the lines from what I'm trying to say. Some interesting poses for photographs. That was one. And I think we nicknamed them the Disgustingtons. We're such prudes. But yes, I remember now. It all comes screaming back to me.
Yeah, well, I'm so pleased that you explained the situation, because you've done that really well without saying how bad it actually was. But anyway, fond memories of Kimberley. But that's where the England team are now. Mentioned that the T20 series was wrapped up 3-0 to England. They won the first one by 4 wickets, thanks to a brilliant 5th wicket partnership between Nat Siverbrunt and Amy Jones. The second game was won by 36 runs after they posted a mammoth 204, Danny White-Hodge 78 of 45. That brought her past 3,000 T20 international runs. Runs for Nat Siverbrunt as well. 4 wickets for Sarah Glenn, which got her player of the match. And then the most recent one, England chased down 124 inside 12 overs. So very, very dominant. Charlie Dean was player of the match, actually, with 3 wickets, and we got to catch up with Charlie Dean earlier. Charlie, great to see you, and thanks for joining us on the Daggers and Lids podcast. First of all, just tell us where you are. How are things going out in South Africa?
Yeah, we're in Kimberley now, so sort of moving our attention a bit more towards the longer format. Got some ODIs on the horizon, so yeah, it's been successful so far, and hopefully we can replicate our T20 form throughout.
Yeah, just touching on that T20 form, obviously you've won the T20 series 3-0, and has to be said, pretty comfortably. I'd imagine from a confidence view, especially after the T20 World Cup, things must be feeling a lot more positive in that format of the game.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I think we've had some strong reflections after the World Cup. We probably reflected on, you know, the fact that in the past two T20 World Cups, we probably underperformed. And I think we were heading in a really good direction, and then unfortunately, you know, didn't quite turn up on a day which wasn't a sort of knockout game for us. So yeah, trying to be really ruthless and be able to keep performing under pressure. And I think the way we've gone about our cricket as a sort of reaction to that has been yeah, really promising. And yeah, it's just positive vibes in the group at the moment.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, that, Charlie, isn't it? Because, you know, in the build-up to the tournament and over the last couple of years or so, in sort of bilateral series, you've been dominant in T20 format, and that's not just here, that's actually going overseas as well. It's when it comes to, just going back to the World T20, but when it comes to tournament cricket, that's where, you know, as you mentioned, it may be underperformed, and it's a very difficult, I imagine, sort of, trying to locate and put your finger on what the issue is when it comes to tournament cricket, as opposed to, it's not anything you've been doing on the field, batting, bowling or fielding or anything like that, but I suppose that can be a difficult one to try and overcome and pinpoint what the issue was in tournament cricket.
Yeah, I think massively. And I think if you look at our, you know, winning percentages across the last 18 months, it's been, you know, one of the highest across you know, most of the best teams. So that's sort of the positive, but then I guess it's trying to turn those really crucial games into our favour. And how can we do that? It's you know, the 1% is the, you know, mental side of the game, perhaps, that when we're under pressure, how can we be able to park what's just happened and really think clearly and objectively about what we have to do, you know, potentially getting a bit drawn into the emotions and that side of the game, where, you know, in order to perform, you need to be completely in the moment. And I think, yeah, I think that's a big work on for us. We've got a fairly young side. When you know, compare, I think we were the second youngest squad compared to Scotland, I think, was the youngest squad in the World Cup. And it's not an excuse. I think it's just actually, even though we've got a lot of experience in the side, you know, how much have we played in those knockout situations? Do we know what to do when you know, things don't quite go our way? How do we come back from that? So I think that's a lot of learning for a lot of us. And then also sharing from the players who've done it before. So yeah, we've had some really good conversations. Hopefully that progresses into, you know, performances on the pitch. But yeah, I think from you know, where we're at, we feel like we're in a really strong place for yeah, the upcoming Ashes, the rest of this series. And not that we want to move on quickly from the World Cup, because there's a lot of learnings, but I think one game doesn't define us.
How much of that, Charlie, links into leadership within the group? Because you've touched on the fact that it's a relatively young squad. And I think it's fair to say, from a media point of view, a lot was made of the fact that Heather wasn't on the pitch in that game where you got knocked out by the West Indies. So I've got two questions for you. So one is, how much have you spoken about that from a leadership point of view in terms of getting better as players to support Heather? And then, is it something that you would fancy? Because when Daggers and I have spoken about this in the past...
I wouldn't want to buy questions. I was going to sort of gently lead into that as well. And you've just overtaken there and just slid
in. I've gone straight in.
Good on you. Good on you. Let's like a pincer movement. Let's go in on Charlie like that.
But answer the team one first, and then you can maybe let us know where you're at with leadership.
Yeah, I think both Nat and Heather have slightly different styles of leadership, I think. But I think this should be so much ownership on players. And I think potentially in that West Indies game, maybe we shied away from brave options. We went into our shells, maybe went with comfortable. I think when I reflect on how I bowled, I didn't bowl like my slower one. I didn't trust my wide plan. So I think, you know, with Heather there or not, that's still on ownership on us. And I think that's my main takeaway is, how can I empower myself to be braver in those moments? And I don't think if Heather was there, maybe I'd been encouraged to push myself a little more. But equally, you know, if I don't feel comfortable in that moment, then she's not going to force me to do anything that I don't want to do. So, yeah, I think I feel like there's been a lot of scrutiny on that. And I think that's harsh because I think we need to take accountability as players ourselves. But yeah, in terms of, you know, is that something that I want to do?
You've done it before, haven't you? You've obviously had a season doing London Spirit when Heather was injured.
Yeah, I think it's a sort of leadership and backing my own instincts is something that I'm really trying to develop and push forward. I think as a kid, I captained my under 15s Hampshire sides and I think potentially I've sort of got out of practice of that. But I really enjoyed captaining at Spirit, and I think I think that's something that could be in my future. But I also think, you know, I'm still young in terms of cricketing experience, and I guess I need to keep working on those skills before it's maybe something that can be taken really seriously. But yeah, I can't say I've not thought about it.
Yeah, I was going to ask, and this is our job to try and make you feel as uncomfortable as you possibly can, and as awkward as you possibly can with these questions. So we'll continue on this line, and let's see how we go. My question is it difficult to block out the noise? Look, it's been mentioned on this podcast, and we're not the only ones to have mentioned about the potential for you in a leadership role down the line. Now, is it difficult to actually block that out? Or is it nice to hear? Or how do you respond to those sort of conversations being had when you are the subject of it?
Yeah, I think it's nice to hear. You know, I think even being in those kind of conversations, I guess you spotted something slightly in me that could has a bit of potential in that area. But I think it's hard when I just want to be the best bowler, the best, you know, potentially all-rounder that I can be for the team right now. And then if those things come in the future, then, you know, that's something that you know, I guess I'll have to embrace. But, yeah, I think I tried not listening to a lot of stuff. I think when we first, you know, lost that World Cup
probably
game, I was sort of scrolling and reading comments, and I was like, no, it's just not worth it, because the opinions are that, you know, really matter are the ones inside the camp. Not that I don't appreciate your opinions, of course. But yeah.
Well, if you ever do go down that line, don't be a captain like your daddy, who was a miserable captain, Lee. Let me tell you, he used to set things like in a two-day game, he used to set like 300 off 40 overs or something like that, and it would just squander. He was a miserable captain. So be more aggressive than him. Say hi to him for us when you do. Sorry, Lee, continue.
No, I was going to move. Actually, I wasn't intending on speaking this much about the T20 World Cup, but let's just look ahead now. Obviously, you've got the ODIs, you've also got the Test match, and you're going through the same format that the Ashes will be come January. So last question from me really is just how much chat has there been about the Ashes? Obviously, it's not too far away now.
Yeah, I think, you know, the start of the T20 series, we sort of, you know, this series versus South Africa isn't a multi-format series, you know, they're each individual, but we're trying to kind of treat it in that way, that every game we want to get as many points as we can, because it might matter later down the line. So trying to be really ruthless in games that could go either way, because you know, should we need an extra 2 points here and there? It's really important. I think we sort of framing it as every game we're starting from a 0-0 kind of basis, so that it feels like, you know, even if we're 2-0 up in a series, that extra game, you know, really does mean a lot. It's in the back of the minds. We're thinking about it, and we know what a tough competition that we've got going right to Australia and playing in their backyard. So yeah, I think we're looking forward to that.
I had actually about 15 more questions for you. Lydia might have some, but I won't ask all of them. Just a couple of quick hitters, really. Regarding your bowling and your role within the side, not necessarily in ODI cricket, but in T20 cricket, because we've seen you play numerous different roles, whether it be taking the new ball or bowling more in the power play or actually just holding yourself back. How much do you know ahead of time what that role might be, or is it just being ready to go with whatever is required of you, or is there an area that you prefer to actually perform with the bowling?
We have little discussions before the game. I think I know now that I'm probably going to be used one over, maybe two in power play. But I think it depends how the new ball reacts quite a lot of the time, because if it's swinging, then you want to get as most overs as you can out of the quicker bowlers, trying to keep that ball up and moving. So it really changes game to game basis, you know, what ground we're at, things like that. If there's a longer side, or is the wind blowing in the right direction, you know, there's so many things to take into account. But I think I'm just sort of in a place now where I feel like I'm ready no matter where I get thrown the ball. I think if I wasn't to bowl in the power play, maybe I'd feel a bit out of the game. You know, I quite like to get in early and just calm into it, have a little stamp on the game early, so then you can, you know, ease a few nerves. I'm really loving bowling in sort of all phases of the game, and I think it's hard to then judge yourself. You know, probably my first two overs in the power play, I'm like, brilliant, and then I'm like, oh, how did I mess that up in the middle overs? I've got 4 hours. It should be easier, you know. It is good fun. It's a good challenge to be able to control how you bowl in different phases.
And this is the genuine last one from me. I know, and we're grateful, hugely grateful of your time. But it has been, and it will be, one of the busiest winters for the England women's side, having gone to the UAE for the Women's T20 World Cup. You're over in South Africa for a multi-format series, and then you're off to the Ashes as well. So tell us about chill-out time. Tell us about Christmas time. What is the plans in the Dean household? What is Santa bringing you?
Well, that would be spoiling it. I don't know what Santa's doing. But I think we've got 2 weeks maybe at home before we jet off to Australia. So I think I'll try and make the most of that. I think my mum booked a spa. It's my birthday as well on the 22nd. Yeah. So it's all happening in about 2 weeks. So
did you ever get Christmas and birthday presents together then? Did mum and dad just sort of like, sort of, here's your Christmas, here's your birthday, or did you get both as one?
I think my parents were hyper aware of the fact that whenever I got a birthday present in Christmas wrapping paper, I'd be so upset. So they always tried to make them separately. But it's a tricky time to have a birthday, isn't it?
It is
a very tricky. My brother's birthday is on Christmas Day, actually. I often go for the, I spent a bit more, so here's your Christmas and birthday present as well.
Yeah, but so I guess you should just be grateful for getting anything, but that little spoiled child in me was like, oh, I can't.
Oh, nice. And so you'll be at home for Christmas, Charlie?
Nothing too special, just spending time with family and, yeah, reconnecting, and then, yeah, I guess trying to decompress a little before it kicks off again.
Nice. Well, thank you so much again, Charlie, for your time. I know it's been busy and you've just landed in Kimberley. But good luck for the rest of the series, and also good luck for the Ashes if we don't speak to you before then.
Thank you so much. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Charlie.
Well, really good to hear from Charlie Dean. Daggers, what did you make of that interview?
I made of it that there's a future England captain talking. And I know she was sort of like playing it, not necessarily playing it down. I thought she explained herself really, really well. But just you listen to the answers she gave, the thoughtfulness, the you know, the explanations, the mindsets and the processes that she goes through, A, as a bowler and as a member of the team. And I cannot help but think that that is captaincy material. I can't help that. And I know we're sort of putting the cart before the horse a little bit because there is not a captaincy availability to be had at the moment. But I think you've got to plan down the line if you're England. Mm. And I thought that, you know, the way she talks about the game and thinks about the game and the processes and the fact that how she was learning from that World T20 about sort of saying, well, maybe you're a bit conservative. Maybe I was a bit conservative. Maybe, you know, and those little aspects, all part of the armory for when, if you do take the reins one day or if you're put into that position. So that's what I gleaned from it. And I think, you know, interesting to hear how they perceived their World T20 campaign. There's been some interesting things that have been said since the past of that. I'll come back to that in a minute. But what was your overriding thought about what she said?
Exactly the same. I was so impressed with the thought that the genuine thought that she was giving our questions, because sometimes that when we interview people, and this is across the board, men and women's cricket, you do chat to people and you ask them a question and they roll off the what they're trained to say, and they don't necessarily engage that much. But I think what I liked about Charlie Dean was also her willingness, as you've alluded to show a bit of vulnerability, to say, actually, I'm not at the peak of my game. I still need to improve on things. And she's got such a good cricket brain. You can tell that.
Yeah.
She says cricketing-wise, she's still got a lot to learn and she hasn't got as much experience as she would like. But out of everyone in that England squad, her cricketing brain, I think, is up there with Heather's, the way that she looks at the game. And yeah, as you say, it's interesting to see how she reflected on the World Cup. But what was the other thing that you were going to say?
Well, it was interesting. I think, you know, there was an interview and the way that England go about it. And I do think there is something in what I asked about the fact that in bilateral series, you know, they're demolishing teams. Now, this is a South Africa without Marizanne Kapp. She wasn't available for this T20 series. And they did have other players. Laura Wolfart not available for the last one. She was ill. I think Nonkululeko Mlaba was rested as well for either the last game or during the series. So they were trying to think a few things South Africa. They weren't at their strongest. But it was interesting. Heather Knight, she was actually interviewed prior to this and sort of like, you know, not saying she was surprised about the reaction to England's loss, but she sort of said it's, you know, difficult for 10 bad overs in the World Cup. And I was like, well, it wasn't 10 bad overs in that World T20. You know, in a position like that, in a tournament such as that, which is short and sharp, and you only have what limited amount of pool games, you've got to be absolutely on it for every single game. You've got to make sure. I don't think it was 10 overs. I think it was 40 overs plus 10. The 10 overs against the West Indies and the 40 overs against Bangladesh, because that's where actually England probably didn't qualify. Look, if you lose a game in the World Cup, that's, you know, you lose a game. But you've got to win your games against weaker opposition by a big margin to absolutely make sure that you're the second place side. You know, most times that there's going to be a situation in a group where, you know, one side will win all of the games and the next side, the second place side, will go through with one loss. And that's completely legitimate. That's absolutely fine. But you've got to make sure that your net run rate, as you know full well, that could be a deciding factor as to whether you qualify or not. I don't think it was the 10 overs against the West Indies that was entirely the one small area of England's tournament that actually didn't get qualified. I think in that Bangladesh game, you know, you perform better against Bangladesh, you knock them off in 15 overs, or you be a little bit more on your game and not so rusty looking, I think you qualify for the semi-finals and you have a different conversation. So that was interesting to me. And obviously, but what she did say was that you know, this, because now of the state of the women's game in this country, that, you know, she also sort of said, we've got to take it as well. We've got to take the criticisms that come our way, whether we think they're harsh or whether we think they're not harsh. I think she was adamant about that, and I think that was very well put by her. But I think England, it's all very well winning games. The things that matter, the Ashes, absolutely, is something that is hot on our radar, and they will want to perform and get the Ashes back in, you know, with how even the series was when it was over in the UK last. But what you're judged on is performances in World T20s and World Cups. I think 2025, when the 50 over World Cup is coming, I think, you know, that's what you get judged on. And in the women's game at this moment in time, that is the entirety of what you're playing for. That's how I see it. And I think if they can find a way, it is not easy to recreate tournament cricket, but those pressure moments and all of that sort of stuff. But it's something that they've got to look at, haven't they?
Yeah, and I think I agree. It's not easy to replicate tournament cricket pressure, but it is easy to replicate the standards, the behaviours, the ruthlessness that you want to have as a group. Because when you look at that T20 series, you know, South Africa were rotating players, they were resting players. So this is that's their opportunity to say, look, let's harden up a little bit and let's be really ruthless in the way we go about these games. And let's not get lulled into a false sense of security of thinking we're back where we need to be, because they would probably admit they've still got a lot of work to do in certain areas. So that's sort of my hope, and hopefully that's not come across too critical. I just think it's how you go about these types of series against South Africa, where you are expected to beat them, is how you go about that, because then that will get you into good habits moving forwards.
Something else Charlie said, I don't always say, look, my opinion, your opinion, other people's opinions and stuff like that. But if enough, I understand the England team care about what he said within their camp and within their ranks. But there's a lot of cricketers, the former players and people in the media and stuff like that. If enough people are saying something, there might be something in it. So it might actually be worthwhile listening to one or two things that gets said and maybe highlighting, because maybe it's something that you've not thought of, or maybe it's a different direction that you might want to go to. I wouldn't close myself off to everything that's said in the media. I don't think they do it in the men's game. You know, they don't. You know, I think this is something that the women's game, you know, is getting more of. There's more media exposure. There's more things being said, and that is exactly what we want and where we wanted the game to get to, and it needs to happen even more so. But I wouldn't close myself off from it and just shut off all outside noise and just sort of park myself into a bubble where, well, as long as as long as everyone thinks I'm doing okay, I'm doing okay. No, you know, this is your job. This is what you've got to be. So, I think sometimes there can be good that comes out of what, I'm not talking about me or you, it might be me or you. Or it might be Mel Jones, or it might be Simon Dool, or it might be Mark Butcher, or whoever it may be.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I wouldn't close myself off to all of it, because there might be something you've not thought of, or maybe something that does need to be heard.
I completely agree. So the ODI series kicks off in Kimberley on December the 4th. Just some squad news, just to let you know, because we're going to move on to domestic cricket now. But Renan McDonnell-Gay and Seren Smail got called up to the squad. So Seren Smail to replace the injured Bess Heath, and Rhiannon McDonnell-Gay to come in for Freya Kemp, who has flown home. Lauren Filer will, as we know, remain in the squads, but let's just keep an eye on her speeds, because she bowled a couple of overs in that last game, which were regularly at the 75 mile an hour mark. So that'll be good to see
slippery.
How she goes. Yeah. And lastly on that series, South Africa have named their new coach. So they've been without a full-time coach since May this year. So that coach is Mandla Mashimbai. Hopefully I've got that pronunciation right. But he's a former fast bowler who has coached the Titans franchise. He's also been the bowling and assistant coach for South Africa Men and the Pal Royals in the SA20. So it'll be interesting to see how he goes. Right, two tournaments now to cover off. One that is has just finished is the WBBL. The final was at the weekend, that took place at the MCG, because the Melbourne Renegades finished top of the group, so they went straight through to a home final, and that was against Brisbane Heat, who finished second. But because of how it works, they have a challenger, which is third and fourth playoff against each other. The winner of that game goes through to play the eliminator, which is against second place. So that was Brisbane Heat. And that's that was Sydney Thunder who won that game against the Hobart Hurricanes. Sydney Thunder then lost to the Brisbane Heat. So that's how we got to that final, which was which was the Renegades against Brisbane Heat. Renegades batted first. I was watching that game. They looked as if they were struggling a little bit. They lost early wickets, but then they managed to post 141. Thanks to 69 from 61 from Hayley Matthews. She pretty much anchored the innings. The rain then came down, so it was a reduced game, which meant that Brisbane Heat needed 98 from 12 overs. They just got up to 90 runs for six in those 12 overs. Jess Jonathan, really valiant effort from her, 44 from 28. So they couldn't get over the line. They were searching for their third title, I think, the Brisbane Heat, which would have been the most of any women's Big Bash side, but not to be for them. But it was to be for Sophie Molyneux, Georgia Wareham, Hayley Matthews, DeAndre Dottin, and worth mentioning Josie Dooley as well, who we spoke about a long time ago. She had a really bad stroke, which she's still not recovered from. But in the celebration, she was there and in amongst it with her Renegades teammates. So it was nice for them, because I think that's the first time they've won the WBBL. So, what did you make of it? Well, or the competition as a whole as well.
Just on that, I think I saw a video of the coach. Coach took off his winner's medal and gave it to Josie Dooley. And it was one of those sort of "I'm not crying, you're crying" type of videos that I watched. So that was a lovely moment. Nicely, Grace Scrivens as well. Getting on the winners' medals. The competition as a whole, it's a good comp. It really is. It's a fabulous comp. Love the surfaces they played on, albeit the MCG one was but they'd had a bit of dodgy weather around it in Melbourne.
Yeah.
You know, I love Melbourne. God knows why they host a final. Just stick it in Perth, for God's sake. You know what the weather's going to be there. Anyway, it's a great competition. And it was nice to see DeAndre Dottin come back and be a winner. If you got Hayley Matthews in your team, you're going to be in and around sort of a winning position. I thought Jess Johnson was going to do it in the end.
Yes.
If there was any player that could, for me, she is one. I think she's a wonderful cricketer. I really do. Love talking cricket with her as well. And my admiration for her holds no bounds. She's been doing it a long time. And I just thought, while she was there, this could be on, and just fell a little bit short, just a bit too much to do. My overriding feeling from the WBBL is the young players.
Yes.
Three to name. Kiva Bray, and I think I pronounced her name right, but I think it's Kiva Bray, 15 years old. Played in all 10 games for the Sydney Sixers. Took 10 wickets as well with her right arm. Sort of medium fast. She's 15 years old. She will put pace on. She was bowling around about the 110 kilometres an hour mark, which, as we know, when you convert it, is 40 cubic centilitres. So I don't so that was one, Kiva Bray. Lucy Hamilton, left-armer from the Brisbane Heat, who took 5 for 8 against the Stars, 10 wickets again for her. And she needs to put on a little bit of pace. But what she is tall and lean, and she gets a little bit extra bounce, left-arm angle. I liked a lot. She can swing it a little bit. But again, these are young players. They've got time to develop their game. So you know, just keep an eye on that. Chloe Ainsworth was my fave. Absolutely. Yes. I really like Chloe Ainsworth because she's a hit the pitch bowler. She played last year in the WBBL. She's just won the Young Gun Award. I love the Aussies. Oh, she's the Young Gun Award for the WBBL. Again, she bowls at about 110, but she hits the pitch hard, swings it into the right handers, likes it in the top of off sort of area. And I'm looking forward to seeing all of that. I think all of them might be involved in the Australian under-19 squad for the T20 World Cup that's happening in January. So I'm looking forward to seeing them. I just love seeing new talent unearthed.
Yeah. But
the competition as a whole is pretty good. It's a pretty good comp. I like the way they've done it. They've been doing it. It looks BBL 10.
There's a reason why
it's been doing well. Would I like to see it sort of overlap with some double headers with the men? Yeah, I would. Mm. I'd like to see better crowds, and I think that's one way of doing it. It then turns into a lot. I like some of the grounds that they use, like the Drummoyne Oval, Junction Oval, places like that. I think that's absolutely right. And North Sydney Oval and stuff like that. But overall, it's a blooming good comp. That's my overriding. We've got to see some really good cricket.
Yeah, I completely agree. Obviously, congratulations to the Melbourne Renegades. Worst to first
for them. Bottom of the table last year, win it this year. Well done, them.
It's like the Melbourne Renegades men's team. They've struggled over the years. But, Doug, as you mentioned, double headers. It's a nice segue into the domestic news that we had back here in England, which has been the announcement of the domestic fixtures. So for the Metrobank One Day Cup for the counties and also the Vitality Blast for the men's and the women's counties. So some dates for your diaries. The Metrobank One Day Cup for the Tier 2 counties starts on the 19th. The Tier 1 counties starts on the 23rd. Tier 2 finals day is at New Road, Worcestershire on Sunday the 14th of September. And then a week later, on Sunday the 21st of September, Tier 1 finals days is down at Hampshire in the Utilita Bowl. And then for the Blast, that all kicks off. And this is where the double headers come into it. On Thursday the 29th of May. And finals day is at the Keir Oval on Sunday the 27th. So that will be really interesting to see where it's at in terms of crowds and the following that it's created. But nice that those fixtures are out so early and the double headers are going to be prominent as well, aren't they?
Yeah, very much so. And like you said, much like we sort of saw in the first year of the 100, we don't know how it will go. We don't know what's sort of support there will be, crowds, etc. I'm sure there will be schemes put on by all of the counties, and the counties themselves will want to market it really well and give it the big boost that they should so deserve to get.
Yeah.
So, looking forward to seeing the double headers, looking forward to finals day. It's one of those sort of, we don't know, let's see how it plays out and see what results of it. And looking forward to seeing when it, you know, as it turns into county cricket again for the women. So it'll be all good.
See how it unfolds. And just to finish off, we should have asked Charlie Dean, actually, about her signing for Somerset. Heather Knight have been signed for Somerset. The other news that I found was the coach for the Blaze has been announced. His name is Chris Cumming and he is a Kiwi. He's been coaching the Otago Sparks for the last 4 years. So he's going to be the new head coach for the Blaze. But I think, Daggers, that is us done.
We've
got through a lot there.
We did. And by the way, we do, we keep saying this every single week. What we're going to do, and I've decided this, Lynn, I've not even talked to you about it. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to go through all like historical comments and people messaging and get in touch with us. We do read them all. We're really grateful for your comments and stuff. So please keep them coming in. Thank you to all of our subscribers on our YouTube channel and who get in touch with us on social media. We will do a sort of comments edition and we'll go through all historical ones and see how wrong we probably both were. So we will get that done. There's a lot going on from our perspectives and the world of women's cricket. So we're done. That's good for me, Lid. I'm going to go and find the Christmas jumper.
Oh, yes. Go and do it. Get it on.
Thank you.